Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with the professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor. It kind of slipped through the cracks a little bit because there was no big announcement, anything like that. And a transition for a guy that has been so involved in Seattle sports for many, many years and in the National Football League. Randy Mueller is kind of getting away, not the game itself, but he's trying to maybe go in a different direction. And, of course, we'll get into that right now because Randy Mueller, who was a former general manager here with the Seahawks, he was in New Orleans, Miami, most recently working with the San Diego/Los Angeles Chargers. But Randy, you're kind of going into a new venture right now, also along with going into the Alliance American Football, but there's a transition going on in your career.
Yeah, you could say that, John. It's been kind of fun. It's and you said it right, after 32 years in the NFL and two or three at ESPN in between stops, I decided to make a little change, and it's always been on my list to start something from scratch, and that's really what the AAF, like you said, the Alliance of American Football, is all about. So a well-funded league founded by, you know, one of the all-time greats in Bill Polian, and I'm happy to be on board, you know, as the general manager of the Salt Lake team with Dennis Erickson as our head coach. So it's been fun. It's been a well-planned out league, I'll say that, to this point, and I've only been involved in it for a few short weeks, but it's been well thought through, and I think there's a good window for a league like this to exist. So it's been exciting and fun.
What's it like to be working again with Dennis Erickson?
It's been great. Dennis and I have remained close over the years after our time in Seattle together. We both spend a lot of time in Idaho, Lake Coeur d'Alene area, and so we've had a good relationship since then. And when this came up about a month or so ago, it was a great chance for us to kind of rekindle and talk football. And I had forgotten how much fun those discussions and the experiences we had with the Seahawks were. And we've kind of rekindled that in this Salt Lake venture. And it's been pretty cool, to be honest with you. Even for a guy who's been around a long time, it's been fun to talk football and be a part of something like this from the ground up.
We'll get into the Alliance in a second, but also along with the fact that you're doing this, you're also kind of venturing out into another area in sports.
Yeah, a little bit. I've always wanted to have a little advisory consulting company to kind of take advantage of my 35 years in the NFL and kind of share some of that in some different venues. So, yeah, I'm doing a little evaluating and scouting workshops for some colleges. I'm probably going to represent a few coaches along the way and a few other things in this advisory company called Mules, Inc. And I'm looking forward to doing that as well. And that'll probably be my long range plan, is to spend most of my time with that out 2 or 3 years anyway. But yeah, it's been a fun experience as well. So again, just kind of sharing some of my experiences and all of my stops along the way with the general public in different ways. And still my passion, John, my love has always been evaluating players and scouting, and I can do that, and I can share some of that with people on the street and with colleges and really, frankly, some other venues as well in the pro ranks, doing a little workshop and seminars on evaluating.
Yeah, so for example, I mean, you go to a college and you get together with the football people there. What type of things do you try to do?
Well, what I'm doing is really is helping them improve on their evaluation skills. A lot of coaches, a lot of these recruiting departments at colleges, they tend to look at magazines. They evaluate in all kinds of ways. And I think sometimes the art of evaluating players ourselves gets lost. So I'm really just teaching the basic fundamentals that have helped me throughout my career to some of the young guys in college scouting departments and to some of the college coaches as well. Not everybody is a great evaluator. So my goal is to shorten the gap between the good ones and the not so good ones, and hopefully learning and even rekindling some of these evaluating standards, skills, however you want to say it, things that have, like I said, helped me throughout the years, and sharing them with others. It's been good.
Are there some main points that you have as far as just evaluating talent, the main things you look at? Because, again, there's so many things now with analytics and numbers and stuff like that. How much do you kind of go on the numbers, and how much do you go on your eyes?
Well, it definitely plays a part, and I've been one to kind of adapt to the new analytics way. I think these numbers are a great indicator of how players can be productive in the future. But I also think when you really study football players, the instinctive part, the football IQ, what makes a guy do something in the course of a play or not, those aren't really equated by numbers. And so a trained eye, I think experienced scouts, experienced people who evaluate, that's still big. I think the basic formula for evaluating, though, and it's probably carry over into any industry, is you got to have a job description to fill. So the biggest thing that I've preached over the years and thought that maybe in my stint in Miami with Nick Saban, we did really good was we knew exactly what we were looking for. So that's the basis behind all evaluations. And again, I think it's the case in any industry. If you write the job description, we'll find the people to fit it. But if you don't have a job description, it's a moving target as to evaluating and finding the right fit for it. So that's the biggest thing, I think, first, and maybe the biggest mistake a lot of places make is they just don't know what they're looking for.
Well, that's kind of curious because the way colleges are now, I mean, spread offenses, because I guess you can get the quarterbacks and young players on the field quicker. How do you try to make the adjustment? And maybe because I would have to think that, filling those roles quickly is one thing, but then also what the players are looking for, they're looking for how they fit into the long term for the National Football League.
No doubt. And finding that talent for the National Football League is getting harder because of some of those systems. And like you say, a lot of systems in college now, they run the spread offense. They never get in a 3-point stance. They don't have to process a lot of information because they'll run 100 plays and they can just keep calling plays and running plays play after play and not have to think a whole lot. Well, it's not that way in the NFL because it's the clock is managed different. We might only get 65 plays in a game. So there's a lot more put on players, especially quarterbacks, especially offensive linemen, to adapt and adjust post-huddle. In other words, on the way up to the line, during the line of scrimmage, you've got to adjust to things. That's not really the case a lot of times in some of these offenses now that are run in college. So It's a leap of faith to take what you see in college in a player, for example, an offensive lineman who never gets in a 3-point stance, and then jump that to the NFL where he is in a 3-point stance all the time, coming off with leverage, coming off in a total different way. So you're really looking for skill sets that can adapt to your system. And that's why, again, I think you have to have a job description for each position to know exactly what your coaches are going to ask of that player. And then you find not necessarily a polished player in college now, but you find one with the skill set that you can match up to develop at the next level.
Are there going to be public access on Mules, Inc. in some ways?
Yes, there definitely will be. I think, and we're not there yet, but the website will roll out, I think, in August at some point. We will have a fantasy football corner for those who play fantasy football to maybe get some insight from a former GM, somebody that has a little different angle and a different look that maybe it can help those people. Also, there'll be a little scouting school that'll be more like a subscription service, but people can come there and learn just more of the things that we're talking about now with the details of whether you're in high school or college or anything and want to learn what makes up a football player. We're going to offer that to the general public as well.
Now, back to the Alliance for American Football. It seems like there's so many ex-general managers and coaches that Bill Polian and everybody's pulled into this. And, of course, they've already got the funding with the TV contract and that. I mean, it looks like it's kind of like a well-run NFL type of operation.
It's been awesome, John, and I say that, and that's one of the reasons that I decided to jump on board was obviously my respect for Bill and what he's done being a Hall of Fame general manager, but the other people that they have added to the mix, and like you say, there's four or five of us that have been NFL GMs. All the coaches have spent time in the NFL, most as head coaches in the NFL, and it is a group of great guys with a lot of wisdom and knowledge, and I've been really taken back by how well-planned it is, how good the information has been, and how everybody's worked together. And like I say, one of the reasons I did it is because I like all these people. I respect them all. And to get a group of guys like we've been able to get, I think bodes well for the league, obviously, for the long haul. But it'll be interesting to see how these teams are built. There's some different philosophies, but it's been fun so far, and there are some great experiences to draw from. And we get together quite often over the last month and on conference calls and everything else, and the exchange of ideas has been outstanding. It's been fun.
Well, and it starts right after the Super Bowl and goes for about 3 months before the OTAs. And, of course, the idea is developing the players so they can get back, if they're not in the National Football League, to do it. What type of players are going to be recruited for this league?
Well, I think the main thing and the way we've set up the league with the eight teams is there's a geographical allocation. So, for example, we have the Salt Lake team. There'll be a lot of flavor from BYU, from Utah, from Boise, from Wyoming. Those mountain states, we'll have a lot of those college kids on our team. And then the basics behind that at the next level is we'll get the final cuts from NFL teams. So maybe guys 70 through 90 on an NFL roster, we'll have access to those players. And I'll be shocked if some of those players don't come to us and end up back in the NFL as full-time players. People just need, especially these kids nowadays, just need the opportunity. So I do think this league is going to offer the opportunity for these guys who don't make it in the NFL. I know we'll be scouring the waiver wire in preseason, just like all the other NFL teams are, to jockey around and find the right fit for us. But also, I've been surprised at the quality of player who's still on the street right now who hasn't got an NFL opportunity yet. I've been lucky. Like you said, I spent the last 10 years with the Chargers as their national scout. So I have been on the road, and I have found a ton of guys who I thought should be in NFL camps are not. And so we're in the process of identifying those right now. So we're getting our players from several different angles, and I've found good quality at all these spots so far in players.
And, of course, now there's going to be, I guess, with the eight teams and the 32 teams in a National Football League, I mean, each team in this league is going to have, what, a group of teams from the National Football League they can try to get players from?
Yeah, we've allocated the NFL teams to our eight teams, so we have a little bit of an order as to how we can go about it. And sure, there's going to be good players cut by these NFL teams, and we have an allocation process where they will fall into the categories for our eight AAF teams. And like I say, there's really four teams in the West, four in the East, so we've got it covered. And everybody, like I say, is out at these NFL camps right now trying to get a clear picture on, you know, the back-end roster guys and to give them an opportunity after the final cuts in September.
Interesting. So as you look back at more than three decades in the National Football League, what's been the biggest thing that you look back on and take some pride on?
Oh, I think, you know, I've found good things in all of my stops. I was lucky. I'm a kid that grew up in the Northwest, grew up in Northern Idaho, went to school at Linfield College. So I take my pride in that in my 35 years, I've spent, you know, 27 of it being able to live in the Northwest. Obviously 20 years or so with the Seahawks and the last 10 with the Chargers, I've been able to live in Kirkland and that's been my dream, is to stay in the Northwest. So I take pride in the fact that I've been able to stay home, and everybody always says, what's the best thing about your job? And I say it beats working. It's been awesome. It's the only thing I've ever known, John, is the football side of it. And to say I've been able to lucky to still live in the Northwest and do it, that's any kid's dream in the Northwest, that's for sure.
Talk about that transition from being a Linfield quarterback and how you got on the Seahawks and how you grew there.
Well, it's a prideful story for me too. I think the older we get, the more we look back, obviously. But I got a job as a ball boy 1 year when I was 18, growing up in a little logging town in northern Idaho. You know, the Seahawks had camp in Cheney. I got a job there as a ball boy in 1978, I believe, and went to Linfield out of high school, played quarterback there, and was fortunate enough to be on a national championship team. And so I had kept working summertime jobs back all the way through school, and the Seahawks hired me full-time in 1983. Well, it wasn't but 15, 16 years later, I kept doing my job, and pretty soon I ended up being the boss. So it's kind of a crazy story. I don't know that it happens much anymore, but for a kid growing up in this area to be able to stay with the Seahawks as long as I did, It was a dream come true, and then to be in a position where you could really have an effect on the Seahawks and the product on the field, it couldn't be any better for me.
What things do you take pride in when you look back when you were the GM of the Seahawks?
Well, I take pride on really kind of the whole time. Now, obviously, we had some ups and downs. We had some great years when Chuck was the coach. We had some okay years when Dennis was the coach. And then we had a year, I was there with Mike Holmgren the first year, and we won the division in Mike's first year here. So we had a pretty good team. But I take pride really on the relationships and the players that we drafted and brought in here during that run in the 90s. I mean, all the way from the Cortez Kennedys to the Walter Joneses to you know, Chad Brown to Ricky Waters. I think back at some of the Pro Bowl players that we had during that run in the 90s, and I have a lot of pride in that we were able to acquire those kind of players, both under the ownership of the Nordstrom family, and then when Ken Berrien was here, and then obviously when Paul Allen took over the team, we were able to really make some hay and do some good things. So I think the long haul, the longevity of our stay there. And there's a lot of people that I grew up with in the organization that are still there. So I still take pride in what they're doing. It's just been a dream career for me.
Yeah. Go back into a couple of those players. What was the thought when you drafted Cortez Kennedy? Because again, this guy, he had such a great career, had the incredible season back in 92 when the team was 2-14, yet he was a defensive player of the year on a top 10 defense.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And that year, some of the fans might remember, we actually had two first-round picks in that round, in that year. And we traded them both to move up with New England, I believe, to pick Cortez at number three. So it was one of those things where whatever we had to do to move up, we were going to do it. And I know Mike McCormick was in charge of our team at that time. And I think it was a consensus that we make that move. And in fact, we ran a 3-4 defense under Chuck Knox until we got Cortez, and it forced us to move into a 4-3 defense just because it fit Cortez better. So God bless his soul, one of my favorites of all time. And Cortez had a great career here, and you mentioned the highlight probably of his career in the player of the year on a 2-14 team. That may be one of the best feats I've ever seen as far as an individual player's accomplishments go.
Another guy that you took, Walter Jones, just a natural athlete who had an incredible career and came into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, probably the most talented guy I ever drafted and was lucky to have. That year we drafted Walter. You know, we drafted Sean Springs as well. And I think we took Sean at 3 and Walter at 6. And our draft was pretty much over. We had given away a lot of picks to get up there, but we also had felt like that year was a 6-player draft up that high, and we were able to get 2 of the 6, and both of them ended up playing in Pro Bowl, and obviously Walter going on to Hall of Fame. That's something that most GMs don't get to experience, is drafting a Hall of Fame player, and that's been a very prideful moment for me, and to this day I owe Walter a great sense of gratitude, and all of us who had a chance to be around him, because I think he may be one of the all-timers. Obviously by being in a Hall of Fame he is, but I'm talking about one of the top 3 or 4 offensive linemen to ever play the game.
Yeah, and of course, and the amazing part about him is because of a medical condition, he couldn't take pain medication. And so, I mean, he was just so naturally gifted in being able to block and isolate. And that was a time when the game was changing in the sense that you got the blindside guys coming through, the Jonathan Ogdens and so many of the other top guys in that. And to change the game, because now you don't have to have the tight end right next to a tackle, because you can just have that one guy block out the best pass rusher the opponent has.
No doubt about it, John. He had all the skill set. In fact, I get asked often, what made Walter so good? And the thing that I think, obviously, besides his will and his work ethic and everything else, Walter was one of those guys that had great feet, but yet could anchor and play with power. Usually guys at one of those spots give something up. Either they're really strong and can anchor and can't move as well, or they're very gifted athletically, and he had it all. He had the skill set from really day one that you kind of draw up the, you talk about a job description, you can just list his skills, and that's this job description for left tackle. And like you said, kind of changed the way the game is played. Not only the blind side, but he could do anything and everything, and his longevity proved out. I mean, he was lucky enough to not be hurt most of his career, or hardly any of his career. So he had as good a run as any left tackle to ever play the game.
Well, and you've had a great run, too. It's maybe running a little bit of a different direction, but it looks like it's going to be a good run. Randy Mueller, thanks for joining us on Schooled with the Professor.
Thanks, John. Enjoyed it.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at Clayton ESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.